I've got Jay and Annie Adkins with me here today. I'm excited to chat with them. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Thanks.
Doing very well. Thank you, Neil. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for making time. I appreciate it. I don't get one, I get both. That's double Correct. Time. So I appreciate you both for taking the time. All right, well, I'm going to start with this question, then I'll follow up with one right after. We all got started in real estate somewhere, somehow. How did both of you independently get started in real estate?
Well, we actually got started in real estate together.
Together,
independently
all right,
cool. together.
You know? That was an easy one. All right, well then, how'd you guys get started?
Well, we bought our first house in our mid-20s. And before that, I had no intention of ever buying a house or getting married or having the four children that we have now. But, you know, life changes. And so we did get married and had our first child. And then I decided, okay, I want to buy a house for us to live in. I was working as a bartender and Annie was doing management for a video company. And so we saved up our money, bought our first house, and that was our first property. Shortly after that, we had a couple more kids. House was now too small.
Yep.
We wanted them to each have their own bedroom, but I didn't want to sell the house because it was the house that I grew up in. Actually, my parents sold it as soon as I moved out, pretty much. You know, they skipped town, didn't tell me where they were going.
Oh, that is so not true.
Drop a postcard, right? Yeah.
I had to skip trace them to find them.
That's not true.
No, I'm just kidding.
Wouldn't that be the greatest I learned how to skip trace story of all time?
Because I tried to find my parents, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so funny. No, they moved to Michigan, where my family's originally from, my mom's side, and they lived in Florida. So they're going back and forth and sold the house in Ohio. We ended up buying it back from the people they sold it to. And I just said, I want to keep it. And so we started saving our money again, bought our next house. We were able to qualify to have two houses. And I got hooked as soon as I got the first rent check.
Yeah, that was it.
I was like, these guys are going to pay off our mortgage. And we made over $300 a month cash flow.
It had to be a heck of a feeling. Yeah.
Oh, right. Instantly hooked.
Yeah.
All right. So that was your first entry point into real estate from there. Now, how did you two decide, all right, let's do this again. Let's do more.
Right. Well, we went to the bank and tried to do more the traditional way. And they're like, you're no longer qualified for anything else. So we actually went to high school with a gentleman that is in real estate, started out residential. He's now in commercial these days, but he was doing a lot of rental properties and didn't want to keep all of them. So we talked to him about doing some lease options.
Yep.
And then, so we acquired four or five additional properties that way.
Very quickly,
yeah. And was renting those out. Yeah. I think our required cash flow at that point was $200 or $300 a month. Yeah. So we had four or five of those and things were good until they weren't.
Until they weren't. All right. But I'll get to that in a second. Tell me, how did you go from one rental to lease options? A lot of people don't even know what lease options are. How did you fill that gap in with knowledge?
So, interestingly enough, Neil, there was no internet at that time.
Which is a strange concept for children to believe.
Yeah, it's totally foreign. Yeah, I know. It's like that's almost like saying, there was a time where you didn't fly in airplanes. Right. Like, what?
Yeah. Like there was AOL, but you had to hook it up, go make breakfast. And then when you came back, you were online.
Yeah. You've got mail.
Exactly.
But no, I went to the library and I started checking out books. And thank you, Robert Allen. We're now friends with him. I got his book, Nothing Down, in the 2000s. And so I learned about creative deal structure that way.
Yeah, no, it's always fun to hear back the old days, right? When you actually had it wasn't just right there on your phone.
Exactly. You have to go to the library and look in the card catalog.
Yeah. And occasionally talk to a human, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I got a book, lease option book at the library that an attorney wrote, and he actually put all of his forms in there. So I ripped them to my desktop. Yeah. If you don't know what that means, don't worry about it. Yeah, I was armed and dangerous.
Yeah. Enough to get out and take action. So things were good until they weren't. Walk me through the story then.
All right. Well, Jay and I had had like, I think, 6 rentals at that time from lease options dealing with real estate individual that we knew from high school. We had our own personal property, our second house that we were renting out as well. And my husband used to have a really bad drinking problem and like to drink a lot and then get behind the car.
Behind the wheel.
Behind the wheel of the car and drive. Yep. Long story short, he got arrested for his like 4th or 5th DUI.
Again, arrested again.
Shortly after he was arrested, I found out that I was pregnant with our 4th daughter. And my company said, you've been a great team player up until this point, but now we don't think that you will be. So sayonara to you. So we both were unemployed and we had 3 small children at home, and Jay went to rehab. And
well, I went to jail first. Let's be clear.
And then he went to rehab. And Chase came knocking on the door because we were in adjustable rate mortgages at that time. And this was pre-foreclosure time, but barely pre-foreclosure.
Yep. And we had no equity.
We did real estate a little differently then than we do now based on our experiences. Yeah. But so we lost everything. Everything went to foreclosure. We gave back the ones that we could to the individual that we knew from high school. And he was thankfully very easy. Accepting of that, yeah, and easy to deal with because they were rented. So he really just took over the properties that we had the people in place for. Thank goodness, because when you're in your late 20s, early 30s with 4 small children and literally no place to go,
yep,
the sticker was put on the door and we were going to be homeless in January in Ohio, which is not good ever, but definitely not then.
Well, yeah, I mean, it sounded to me like you you had 2 things going on there, right? Personal and professional, to put it in a box, right? I know you guys are smiling and lighthearted today about the personal side of things, and that's only because you've climbed a mountain.
Things were total, definitely not happy then, that's for sure. And I mean, the story is elaborate. Don't let me, we'll have to fill you in on the details when we have more time, but yeah.
Maybe at a high level, how did you get your way, climb that mountain to the success and sobriety that you possess today? For somebody who's in a similar spot or has a spouse in a similar spot, I guess, what words of wisdom and what can you share to those folks?
Well, from my perspective, I had to focus, first of all, on me personally, because obviously my personal life was shambles and that affected my business life. Everything fell apart because my personal life fell apart. So that's why we're very adamant about people that we talk to and work with. You have to have your personal foundation set firmly so that you can grow your business and yourself personally at the same time. And so I really focused on me first, just going. I went to meetings. That's what worked for me. Yeah. I went to a treatment facility and I just stayed out of anywhere that served alcohol, really, for the first year. I didn't go to grocery stores or gas stations inside. I wouldn't go in. Anyone having parties with alcohol, I would not attend. We owned a DJ company at the time as well. We had just started that off and I subbed all of that work out. I would not go. So I just set myself up to focus on me first. But then immediately after I had about 90 days in, then I was like, okay, not only do I have to focus on me, but my family too. Like, we're not going to have anywhere to live.
Yeah.
Started doing some side jobs for a large commercial investor, and he saw my skills. I was able to rehab our first 5 houses. Annie and I did it together. So I had a lot of skills that I built up, and I did work for him. And he gave me an opportunity to say, hey, what else can you do? And I said, well, my passion is like fixing houses up and renting them or selling them. That's what we decided to do. So he helped us move into our first flip together. We actually moved in with our kids in a house totally destroyed.
Yeah.
Like, I just did the kitchen and a bath so that we could live there.
Yep.
Pipes froze and the ceiling fell in the day we were moving in. So it was interesting from day one. We made it through and we did many deals with him until we were able to turn things around and then start doing stuff on our own again.
So coming off the foreclosure situation, this is where you got connected with him, ended up getting this fix and flip that you moved into so you could work on it and live there at the same time. So you had a place to live in the harsh Ohio winter.
Right.
And,
yeah, exactly.
And you did what I hear you saying is you did what was required of you at the time, which was partner with somebody for joint benefit to get yourself into a financial position where you were like, excellent. Now it's time for you guys to graduate from that partnership, if you will, move on and do it together, the two of you.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No, that's exactly tremendous. Right. You know, a lot of people, I think, see partnerships in some cases, you know, the right partnerships are where 1 + 1 = 3, right? And
right.
Sometimes wrong partnerships, 1 + 1 doesn't even equal 1, right?
Yeah.
So when you find those, not only did you have it with somebody else, but clearly you have it with each other, right? I suspect you have complementary skill sets when you go in to do a project.
Yes, we do.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. All right. So you guys are at a spot where it's time to go do things on your own. What does that look like?
So we were able to get bank qualified again after 3 years. We started purchasing some rentals. By then, the market had officially crashed. You're talking 09, 10. Yeah. And so we are buying houses for very, very cheap here in Ohio and then fixing them up and turning them into rentals. Started building our rental portfolio again.
Yes. And we actually did that using our own credit and the banks. But then we also found a house that was good for the six of us and did a lease option on that. So we were still working our creative financing.
Yes.
And honing those skills. Yeah. So.
So sooner or later on a traditional bank line, you're going to run out of money. The way they underwrite, you either have to move to commercial financing for additional properties or, you know, get outside of a bank. Did you guys end up running into that or what did you do?
We did. We ran into that again shortly after, you know, 3 or 4, the bank's like, you don't make enough money on paper. And it's just too much of a concern for us. Then we looked into, like I said, some creative financing deals that we continue to do. And some hard money and private money lenders that we were making some relationships with. In addition to the commercial guy that started us off back on our feet, we made some more connections in the small town that we live in. And Jay got his real estate license. So things were kind of moving in that direction as well.
Annie had her mortgage license. We really dove into the real estate industry because we wanted to learn, like, what did we do wrong? And we figured out that adjustable rate mortgages weren't the best option for us with no equity in the deal. So we changed our deal structure. Mm-hmm. We have taken over so many properties from sellers. Honestly, they were going to be in our situation.
Right.
They were going to lose their house to foreclosure or lose it for repairs not done by the city, getting the code violation fees piling up every month. We really wanted to target other distressed sellers that were similar to us that just didn't know what to do or how to get help for themselves. So we would go in and consult with them and make a win-win where we could take over their property. We paid their mortgage, responsible for the repairs, insurance, and all of that. It was a win-win for everyone.
So when you say pay their mortgage, are you describing a sub two?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that where we're going here? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We really focused on helping others in the situation that we were in so that they didn't lose everything that they had. We really focus our entire business to this day, even on helping others and making sure that they're solid in their stuff and making it a win-win for everybody. Because back when we lost all of our stuff, that was pre-foreclosure era, just barely, but still at the same time, they knew anything, you know what I mean? Knew anything that could help us. Nobody knew what we needed to do versus what we should have done in the first place. Education and helping others so that they didn't end up in the same spot was really our goal.
Exactly. So it's not just education and helping others from not only from the spot of a homeowner standpoint, your ability to help somebody out of a unique, a terrible situation that they may be in individually, but it's also help investors as well get educated and build a foundation. So because you've lived the path of an investor, you've learned some things along the way. Right. I'd say you got gray hair, but Jay's got no hair. So you're older and you're wiser, right?
There's some gray.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of my gray hair. So
talk to me about how you help other investors.
So we focus a lot on newer investors or people that want to learn a different aspect of real estate investing. So we have people join our mastermind group and we really focus on helping them build a sustainable plan for themselves personally and their business as far as where are you now? Where do you want to go? And then what are the steps to get there? Not just with your business, but your personal life too.
Yeah, to design a lifestyle that they want to live, not just a business, but the whole gamut of everything.
I like that. And here's the reason why. A lot of people I've seen, investors get into this business, and before you know it, that tail is wagging the dog.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And all exactly. of a sudden they've got this monster type of thing and they don't know which direction they're even going. They didn't design it on purpose. So I love right. that ability to design your life on purpose, and then your business, you know, fuels that purpose.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's been very rewarding. Part of the reason why that we implemented that too is because, you know, obviously I said my personal life with drinking, but even after I quit drinking, that was great and everything, but I replaced drinking with working. And so now I'm working 29 out of 30 days a month. I'm doing it for my family, right, quote unquote, right? To give them what I feel that they need, but they weren't getting their dad, or Annie wasn't getting her husband. And sometimes that's hard to see on your own. And Annie made it very clear that I can get what I'm getting from you, I can get in a monthly paycheck in the mail.
Absolutely.
And I was like, oh God, okay. I hear that message. So I need to change. Some things need to change. And that is when we personally joined Mastermind Group at that time.
Yeah.
And similarly, focusing on how do you excel in your business, but how do you do it working less hours?
You're absolutely right. And I think what a lot of people don't quite understand is that addiction manifests itself in very different ways. And right. I live that. Annie knows a little about my story. I've lived that from a work standpoint to the spot where my wife is like, that's it, at wit's end, essentially. And I lived it telling myself the same thing, Jay, doing it for my family.
Yeah.
And they don't, all they really want is a dad, is a husband, is a time. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I commend you guys for facing that, taking it face on, and then having to make a change and knowing that oftentimes it requires going external to plug into other things, to find a new way to live life and live off on your terms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as entrepreneurs, I think the biggest thing is finding that balance, because you really want to succeed and you really want to hit these goals for your business. Right. And sometimes everybody hears of a hustle period, but that hustle period has to have an ending period, or there is no reason for the hustle, right? It just boils down to that. And time is the most precious commodity, and money can come and go. And that's what we painstakingly went through.
I'm in Iowa. I said there's times to plant the seeds, there's times to reap that harvest, right?
Absolutely.
When you go through a period of seasons, I'm with you. You're not harvesting all the time. You're not planting all the time. There needs to be an ebb and flow there. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. Okay. So looking forward, what's this year look like for you guys, both in the buying property business and then also helping other investors?
Absolutely. We have several projects that we're finishing up from last year still, because my husband took a challenge. Someone told us that we couldn't find deals, or that they couldn't find deals in our area. So he was convinced that to prove them wrong, and we did. But
so I bought 24 properties in 6 months.
So now we're playing catch up, which tends to happen once those are done. And then we can kind of take a break. And at the same time, we're focusing on building our coaching program up some more and helping others with the mastermind level that we have, as well as offering some group coaching starting this year. So it's a new realm of coaching for us, but we feel like we do it all the time anyway, because of the people that ask us questions and come to us for some advice. So it's just an even easy transition into some group coaching as well. So we're going to build that out to offer some more possibilities for helping even more people.
Yeah, no, that's terrific. Well, wonderful.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Neil. I was going to say we started buying Airbnbs as well about a decade ago. We were probably pretty early in the game.
Yes, I'd say so.
And so now we're expanding that more, not just in Florida, but we're starting to do it here in Ohio as well.
Yeah.
We're having fun getting those ready to test out a few different areas.
That'll be exciting. We need to, we'll need to do another one of these in a year and touch base on the Airbnb. Cause I keep saying every year the calendar rolls by, I'm like, this is the year I do one. And we just get so busy doing, you know, our commercial business, doing other things that I just never end up adding one. And I'm always taking priority. So I'm curious as to when you start do a new one in your own backyard, if you will, how that comes together. So certainly there's some things I and the audience can learn from you.
Oh, right. Yeah. Absolutely. So far, we've just done it remotely.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to be close by. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. There's pros and cons to it. Is there not?
Yes, definitely.
I don't know about you guys. I've got single family rentals still. We're selling a number of them. Hopefully, we'll be out of them here in the next 90 days. Almost all of them. And so I find myself on things that are in my backyard, driving out of the way to not see them, because inevitably it will not look like anything that I would want to live in. And I will call a property manager and I'll have them do something, which ultimately costs me money and doesn't impact the house at all, except make me feel temporarily better, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Right.
I understand.
Yes. So I can't wait to hear what happens on the Airbnbs.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Let's do this. I went on to the final segment of what I call 4-4 impact. Your favorite quote, mm-hmm. Commit daily with a renewed conviction to do your best work, be the best person you can be, and serve others by helping better their lives. By doing so, you'll receive the greatest fulfillment in life. Jay, what was the genesis of that?
So that started with me just wanting to be a servant to others. I used to drop the kids off at school in the morning, and I always had them say before they got out of the car, God help me do the best I can do and be the best I can be and help another person today.
Yep.
Because they couldn't say that long one that you just said. But I just wanted to instill in them that you always want to strive not only just to do your best, but to help others as well. Because we all need each other in this world to help better our lives and to support one another.
That's tremendous. What do you think holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level?
That's a good question.
I think it's not having specific goals set with challenges and waypoints involved in them.
Yeah. And I would say getting in their own way kind of thing. You know, you need to just get out of your own way. You may overthink it or, and by not having a clear plan, then that's, you know, that compounds the issues there too. So.
Yeah, that's great. Outside of real estate, what are you guys most passionate about?
I personally love to sing. I've been a singer my whole life.
Singer.
I did not know that about you. All right.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I currently sing with the Denison University Community Choir. And I have for 20 years. I've sang at Carnegie Hall in New York City. Sang in the Army band. I was in the Army for a little while. So I love music. That's why I started the DJ company first.
Yeah.
Right? Just very passionate about music.
I actually am in a competitive dance number with my daughters this year.
All right.
At the studio that I used to dance at. And now they dance at, and we travel a lot. We like to travel and take the kids on vacation and just spend time as a family.
Yeah, it's great. What's your guys' favorite way to make an impact in the community?
We like to help some of the homeless people. And we also donate to a lot of fundraisers for people that have health challenges that might not have that covered by their insurance because we have had that challenge when our daughter Jasmine was younger.
Yeah.
We weren't sure what was wrong with her.
Yeah.
We had to do fundraisers to go to hospitals all over the United States to get her seen at the Mayo Clinic, the Cleveland Clinic, and other areas. So we're very passionate about that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. See, we launched just this past year, the Real Grit Vault. It's a collection of resources available to our listeners. I understand you guys are making a contribution. Tell us a little about that.
Yes, we have decided to contribute to your vault the vision outline that we use to do our own visions and then that we offer to our coaching students. We have also supplied the Wheel of Life that we use for our coaching groups to kind of measure where you're at versus where you would like to be in 8 different areas of your life. And I believe I also sent you a checklist that kind of just helps outline the vision and how you need to write it or how you should write it, I guess, to make it mean the most.
That's wonderful. Appreciate the contribution. For anybody who wants to get those, head to www.realgritvault.com. So for people, they want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you. Where should they go? What should they do?
Well, we are on the World Wide Web, as well as some social media outlets. So it's Jay and Annie Adkins, spelled with a D, not a T, .com is our website. And then we are also on Facebook and Instagram that way as well.
Perfect. We'll make sure we get the links in the show notes below for everybody. Guys, I really appreciate you taking the time to connect up here. You've got a wonderful story about how you got into the business, how you worked through all the personal challenges in life that, you know, everybody's got them. It just manifests to everybody a little differently, and how you navigated that and then sunk your teeth into it, found your path. And then you share that with other folks so they can plan a life by design and get to really the business and the lifestyle they so choose. Andy, from your point, a lot of spouses don't make it through. It doesn't matter, husband or wife, doesn't matter. Right. A lot of spouses don't make it through. You were clearly committed. How did you find the inner strength to have conversations, to work and to work with your spouse to get through the challenges that were presented?
Yeah, absolutely. So Jay and I started dating when we were in high school. I was a sophomore and he was a senior. So I knew what Jay was like prior to drinking. And we have been through some interesting situations. I'll just leave it at that for now. But throughout that time frame, anyway, grew up together and we did have three children at that time when he got into trouble. So I knew basically what life could have been like had he stayed sober. Obviously with our kids, I didn't feel like that was a necessary thing for me to just cut all of our ties. And I knew that he could put in the work if he wanted to put in the work, but putting in the work was going to have to be his choice and not mine. Mm-hmm. I tried to keep him sober for a long time. And obviously that didn't work because it wasn't for me that he needed to do it. It was for himself. So I just really kind of looked at the relationship up until that point and then what the potentials that I thought we could be as a couple and as a family. So even though my aunt told me to lock the doors and change the keys when he was in rehab and not to let him back in, that wasn't something that I was willing to do. Just because we had been through it a lot together already, and I knew what his potential was, even if he didn't at that point in time.
Yeah. Jay, what's it like being a person who was work addicted, me, at one point in my life? And I know it's not the same, but addiction is addiction, and it manifests itself differently for different people. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about just having that, the ability to have an addiction to something, whatever that something is. How do you just cope with that? Because oftentimes I've seen people trade one for the other, right? Whatever that thing is. How do you manage that going through, not drinking anymore, with hats off to be absolutely committed, and then getting into work and realizing I just have that kind of personality. It sinks my teeth into it. I'm just all in, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to say go to meetings. That's the easy part. But I really had to fill in. I analyzed like, okay, I was a functioning alcoholic. I still went to work every day. I still did my job very well. I didn't show up late. I never called off. I was highly committed to my position as actually a bartender / bar manager. For one, I needed to fill in the time that I was drinking. That for me, I drank in the evenings. So I started working out. I would go to a meeting at night. I would work out in the evening because that's usually when I drank. And I started reading books again. And so I filled that time with more productive and fulfilling things in my life. Right? So I started working out with Annie. So not only did I improve my body, but we got to spend quality time together. I call that goal stacking, where you have multiple goals in your wheel, and then you look for ways to combine them together, which gives you even more satisfaction. And then we started working out with our kids, doing group workouts and going on walks with them. That was instrumental for me to fill that void with something positive in my life. That was one of probably the most profound things that I did to overcome that.
No, that's incredible. I've read a lot about, of recent time, addiction to people in sports gambling. And the Super Bowl is here just a couple of days from us recording this. And so I'm curious in your guys' take. You know, the issue relative to sports gambling is you can do it almost anonymously. Meaning if you were to drink or you were into harder substances or into work, everybody knows it. You can easily hide behind all sorts of things when it comes to sports gambling until all of a sudden you don't have any more money. And it's a problem. I guess for those who are in a situation like that, or maybe, you know, maybe their spouse is close enough to it to be able to identify it. How does somebody reach out? How does somebody get help? How does somebody break through that? I wish I had a story for you guys. I don't know anybody in this position that I know of, but I read a lot about this and I'm like, there's a lot of suicides. There's a lot of terrible things that are happening as a result of this, because it's a silent addiction for the most part.
Right.
Yeah, and it's becoming so easy now.
Correct.
With the apps on the phones. Yeah,
that's what's so crazy, right?
I don't gamble because I hate to lose. But I understand that a lot of people, they are really into it. There is a way out. You just have to seek help. It starts with just talking about it with your loved ones and trying to figure out who can I go to. It might sound crazy to your listeners, but you can go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and just take out the word alcohol and put it in gambling, and you're in the right place.
I think the first thing is realizing that you have, that there is an issue, and whether that's a spousal talking or a spousal conversation back and forth as to what's really going on, or, you know, Jay didn't really have a choice. He was in jail. So the phone call had to be made. And when that phone call was made, I said, well, I'm sorry. This is like the fourth time that you've been there. I'm not bailing you out this time. You're just going to have to deal with it. One, because we didn't have the money to do it. And two, I was fed up with the fact that we had to continue to do this. But then he and I had a very real conversation when he went and was released on his own recognizance, that, you know, this isn't working for us. This is not what I signed up for. This is not what we agreed would be our life. This was not, you know what I mean? This was not what needed to be going on. And I really kind of laid out, this is what needs to happen as far as I'm concerned. And he honestly, for the first time, I think, looked at it and was really understanding where I was coming from. Mm-hmm. And I think that was because he decided that he was finally done ending up in jail. I mean, that, to be honest, that's...
Yeah, I just knew I don't belong here.
Yeah, and when you can see yourself and have that vision of a different lifestyle, it's a lot easier to step into it.
And then you just need to ask for help. Like Jay said, you just need to either go to any kind of meeting, NAA, AA, Gamblers Anonymous, whatever the case may be.
What's mentionable is manageable. Forcing to have that conversation, to express it to anybody and step into, as you said, Jay, a new vision of yourself. I don't belong here. I don't want this for myself. It's moving forward to something you do want. I appreciate you guys sharing this. I think for somebody somewhere out there, I know with certainty this connects. So I want to thank you for taking the time and expanding upon that. I appreciate you guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're very welcome. There's meetings all over the world every day, almost every morning, afternoon, and night.
Right.
So seek one out. It won't hurt you.
Get out there, plug in, step into your new life.
You got to do the work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Neil. You're very welcome. For everybody here, Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons, reminding that real estate requires real grit. I'll see you next time. Jay, Annie, thanks so much for the time. I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Neil. Appreciate you.
Bye-bye.